Indeed, Gideon Saar and his right-wing New Hope Party joined the coalition Sunday last in a vote of confidence of his handling, Netanyahu's handling of Hezbollah. This has given Netanyahu another 4 seats for a total of 68 out of 120. Now, this provides Netanyahu with some breathing room, but still, if either of the ultra-Orthodox or ultra-rightist parties bolt the coalition, that's the end of the government. Their departure would trigger an election.
On the initial mission, that Netanyahu has continued to say is the overall goal, this idea of eliminating Hamas. We understand there are military leaders in the IDF, the Israeli Defense, who disagree with that end game. What's the significance of that divide?
Yeah, it's not only the generals, but much of the Israeli population as well. They've demanded and they continue to prioritize the return of the hostages. Israel can continue fighting in the hopes of eliminating Hamas, or it can accede to a ceasefire and see the return of the hostages. But achieving both is, I think, highly unlikely. More than this, though, is the plan for the day after. After a year to the day of the initial Hamas attack, I think it's fair to say that the Israeli military has succeeded in creating a vacuum in Gaza. It's effectively broken both the governance and military capacity of Hamas, but there's no consensus in Israel of who or what is going to fill that vacuum. The Israeli public, by and large, does not want to see a reoccupation of Gaza with all that that entails. But Netanyahu's ultra-nationalist, ultra-religious flank, they demand it. They refuse to see anyone but Israel in charge of Gaza, and they think that the resettlement of Gaza is the only way to achieve this. Now, Netanyahu has punted for nearly a year. The risk, of course, is that without a plan, Gaza simply becomes a forever war, a quagmire.
Well, given the weight and the significance of this anniversary, mourning and political reflections we recognize, what are you watching for today and in the coming weeks on this now multi-front conflict?
Yeah, today certainly has a somber mood in Israel, and it's a day of reflection and memorialization. What I'm watching here is two things. First, whether Netanyahu will make good on his promise to retaliate against Iran for that ballistic missile attack, and what form, if any, that response will take. Remember that in April, Iran launched a massive attack against Israel, drones, cruise missiles, and ballistic missiles, though nearly all of those were intercepted. Nevertheless, that was the first time that Iran attacked Israel directly. Israel's response to that attack was muted. It was a single attack on an Iranian airfield, largely symbolic. But things have since escalated. Iran lobbed another 180 ballistic missiles against Israel less than a week ago. That was on October 1. That was in response to the assassination of Hezbollah's leader Ismail Haniyeh in late September and Hamas's then leader Hassan Nasrallah in July, both by Israel. Now, again, the attack by Iran was mostly thwarted by Israeli and American air defense systems. But this time, Netanyahu has vowed a more full-throated response. Naftali Bennett, this is Netanyahu's primary challenger for prime minister, has called on Netanyahu to strike on Iran's nuclear program. And with Hezbollah hobbled, Iran does not enjoy the deterrence against Israel that it did even a few short weeks ago. So I'm going to be watching for an Israeli retaliation, whether it's directed against Iran's nuclear facilities, and if it is, and if it's only partially successful, whether the Americans will follow up with their own strikes. Okay. President Biden has suggested that they won't, but a partial strike against Iranian nuclear facilities would embolden Iran to surpass the nuclear breakout stage, which Biden has vowed to prevent.
Jamie, I appreciate your analysis. Thank you for speaking with us this morning.
Thank you very much.
That was Jamie Levin. He's an associate professor of political science at St. Francis Xavier University.